Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, the fallout continues from a failed deal on property taxes and school funding. Plus, Governor Tony Evers issues more pardons for people convicted of crimes. And the state GOP calls for unity as they endorse Tom Tiffany for governor. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for May 22nd.
I'm Anya Van Wagtendonk.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Welcome to Rewind. We have a lot of the fallout from last week to catch up on. I was very disappointed to miss Rewind during one of the kind of craziest weeks ever.
We missed you.
Shout out to WSI. I got to watch the Senate proceedings from my childhood bedroom, so that was very exciting. But let's talk about kind of what has all transpired since that very dramatic night in the Senate. LFB put out a memo this week kind of determining how much money it would have cost to have implemented that deal. So there was a projected $525 million surplus by 2029 under sort of current spending commitments. With those same spending commitments plus this deal, a $2.9 billion deficit by 2029. So that sort of corresponds with what a lot of the critics of the deal were saying. But what did you make of this new information? What should we kind of be paying attention to here?
This is Democrats' I told you so moment, essentially. They got beat up last week for voting against this. This is like them saying, okay, this was why. Now, a couple of caveats about this exercise. This rule always does this with projections. This is what we have under current law, current commitments, but no spending or so revenue increases included. So over the 27-29 budget, we will likely, though not guaranteed, have revenue come in that will increase. If you hit growth of 4% a year, as Howard Markline pointed out on the floor of the Senate, you can probably cover the cost of this package. Looking back, we have hit 4% in six of the past 12 years for revenue growth, but not in back-to-back years in any of those periods. It's been uneven sometimes. So for Democrats, you're saying, look, right now we have this kind of like projection of we would have $500 million. That's without like taking in other like future, like more money for schools or anything else. But we'd have a cushion. We're worried about the economy, the Trump economy, they call it, going into recession and really submarining our revenue projections. This is our cushion. Mark Lennon, again this week, the co-chair of the Finance Committee, said, hey, we have responsible budgeting. We're in a position with, you know, typical sort of revenue growth to be okay. But this is the kind of fuller picture of what's happening now. What I'm wondering is, can Democrats explain this to people in a way that's meaningful and offsets the attack ads of you didn't vote for rebates and school funding and everything else? Because in politics, if you're explaining, you're losing. It takes a long time to explain $3 billion versus this surplus, and that's a challenge for Democrats.
Yeah, it is kind of a wonky argument that they are kind of facing. And then the other like big caveat in the LFB memo was that it also doesn't account for potential changes, fluctuations due to an uncertain economy. Mm-hmm. So gas prices are going up, oil prices going up. If there's a recession, more people will be enrolling in Medicaid. Maybe more people will be entering public schools, leaving private schools. There's all of these fluctuations always kind of in place. But that's a long sentence for Democrats, again, to have to say when on a flyer you can say, didn't want you to have $300 in your pocket. And so we're definitely, I think, seeing the messaging battles beginning. Speaking of which, the most vulnerable Republicans in the Assembly, six of them, sent a letter to Governor Evers essentially asking for a reset, wanting to go back into negotiations, try again, have another special session. So that's Donovan, Snyder, Moses, Zimmerman, Novak, and Franklin. They also helpfully were sort of at the front of the press conference on the day of the vote. Excuse me. What does that tell you, that they are kind of reaching out directly to Governor Evers?
It's probably a coincidence that they're targeted by Democrats this fall, being sarcastic, obviously. But look, they want to be out there leading this charge of, we want to give you back your money. It's popular to say you should have more money. That's not really a hard question for voters to say, yes, I want more of my money back. What I'm watching, though, is does this issue outweigh these other money issues, which are gas is still $4.50 a gallon, Donald Trump's still in the 30s, there's all kinds of like concerns about the economy going forward. A Better Wisconsin Together, which is a liberal group, has been doing polling in legislative districts. I want to caution everybody, polling is very challenging at the assembly seat level. But in all of these districts you're seeing, Donald Trump is unpopular. That we can all buy, right? That makes sense. You drill down into like the head-to-heads. They're facing headwinds in a generic ballot. Again, caveat is it's likely low polling, so maybe. But Trump is a drag. So does Trump outweigh the push they're making on giving you back more money? That's the big question for November.
And what's also interesting is that we are not seeing sort of unified messaging from Democrats. Of course, there was kind of a big split there. And so additional fallout, some pretty harsh words from both Evers and then Democratic critics of Evers. So he went on WISN TV and talked about it. He essentially said those Democrats in the Senate who didn't vote for this were voting against putting money in people's pockets. That's a pretty big slam of members of his own party. It is damn near the worst thing ever when people say they don't have the willingness to get some money to schools. And then Gordon Hintz, former minority leader in the Assembly, put out this very kind of aggressive tweet thread that said, among other things, he called Evers a word that I cannot say on television, but it's something like a jerk, and that he essentially is throwing all of these Democratic lawmakers under the bus. I mean, these are like some real fighting words.
So let's talk about Hintz first. He might have PTSD from being a minority leader under Governor Evers. Some Republicans I've seen last week have been like, wow, why are these guys like letting loose on Evers? This is so shocking. He's the most popular politician in Wisconsin. They have not really picked up on the tensions over the last 7.5 years. Gordon Hintz, in late 2021, announced he was seeking re-election and stepped down from being minority leader. In spring of 2020, Jennifer Schilling announced that she was not going to seek re-election in April. In mid-May, she resigned, period, from the legislature. You don't typically have leaders leave in the middle of a session. They had, though, become frustrated with Governor Evers and his staff about how they run things. The Evers operation, and Evers is not a creature of the legislature, right? He came up with the education establishment. He doesn't appreciate what it's like to be in those chambers or like what the strategy is sometimes. So, for example, go back to the 2019 budget. Republicans stripped everything that Evers wanted out of his budget, built their own, sent it back to him. I think there's a companion bill in the Evers, and the companion bill in the budget had like a combined $500 million in income tax cuts. About $400 million were in the budget by itself. Evers signed that budget. Not a single Democrat voted for it because they thought, okay, we're a unified party. This is our brand new governor. We're going to stand with him and not vote for the Republican budget. Well, Steve Doyle, who we know is a perpetual GOP target from Alaska, would have loved to voted for $400 million in tax cuts in that budget. And if the governor had the force to say, hey, just so you know, I might sign this thing, it might be good for you politically to vote for this, he would have loved that. He didn't get it. And so for Schilling and Hintz, they were kind of like just fed up with this. And so report on the time, it's kind of like passed or died down because Evers won re-election. He is the most popular politician in Wisconsin. He's leader of your party. You're not going to clash with him publicly most of the time. But he's leaving now, and they feel like he gave them a raw deal. Now they're letting loose. Now this tension is here. My question is, when's it die down, if it does? If you look at the polling numbers for Trump right now and gas prices, there is one way for Dems to screw this up. Well, a couple. One of them is to be at war with each other for the next 5.5-6 months. This is not a good start to that. Now, I've heard from people already like, okay, got to tone it down. But when you have this as your foundation, this is not a great start to that unity message ahead of the fall.
Yeah, I mean, and we're also seeing that a little bit in the responses from the various gubernatorial candidates as they're trying to kind of stake where they are in relation to Evers and in relation to kind of, again, the messaging around property taxes and school funding. We are looking ahead to polling that will be coming out of Marquette next week, looking into this very specific issue. Again, I think the usual caveat about polling applies and how closely are like sort of normal people paying attention to this. But it'll be really interesting to see kind of where your typical voter lands on this issue, because I think it really will be kind of, hammered on for the next however many months until the election.
Yeah, it's not going to be your typical 800 voter poll. It's going to be a snapshot of adults, which is a different samples. Keep that in mind at home when you see the poll results. Okay, it's not voters, it's adults, which is a little bit of a difference. And it's going to be about basically, did you want this to happen? And so I'm guessing you're not going to see like much comfort for Democrats about their position, because on the surface, people say, well, yeah, I want my money back. And this memo about the $3 billion, roughly, of a shortfall, that hasn't really sunk in. I love doing what I do. I realize that most people don't really enjoy LFB memos the way I do. That's okay. But how do Democrats message that? It's going to give you a starting point of where they're at right now in that messaging battle.
Right, and as you say, if you're explaining, you lose. But if you do have to get into the sort of long-term tax implications versus the short-term cash-in-your-pocket implications, that is a really hard. You can't, I think, put that on a mailer. The final sort of set of comments this week came from Tom Tiffany, who, of course, kind of like weighed in leading into the vote. And then he was at the state convention over the weekend. We have a little bit of video featuring you as well of his comments on this deal.
As I began to hear some of the details that were coming out, and it was evident that they were not going to return all of the surplus to the taxpayers, I just thought that was wrong. Think about two governors that you just heard from today, Governor Thompson and Governor Walker. Do you think if they had a bill that was a priority, they couldn't find one member of their party that would vote for it? I mean, Governor Evers could not convince any Democrat senators to vote for it.
So were you surprised by these remarks? Again, he was opposing this whole thing, and then he kind of had strong words to say about it getting sunk anyways.
I had a couple of Republicans argue to me that when your opponents are at war with each other, you don't get in the battle. You step back, get some popcorn, and watch the show, to borrow an off-use phrase in politics. So it was kind of an interesting tack by Tiffany. I don't know if it hurts him a whole lot, but it's not really great for him to be involved in this, enmeshed in this. He could have just said, like, hey, I think you should give it all back. And leave it at that rather than like getting involved in these conversations.
Yeah, so again, this sort of like politicking of it. And that comes amid this kind of broader theme at the GOP convention, a call for unity. And so we'll also throw to a little bit of video of Senator Johnson talking about the need for unity in the Republican Party.
In addition to the relentlessness of the left and the effective infiltration of these institutions, you know what the left is really good at? Completely being unified. If we're going to win, we got to unify. And we got to unify now. We have no room for division. United we stand, divided we fall. Let's make darn good and sure, come the November election, we are standing tall, united in victory.
So kind of funny to say that the left has no trouble with unity after we just saw some pretty big intra-Democratic Party fights. But this was a consistent theme at the convention. Also something we saw a little bit at their convention last year. So this has kind of been a persistent issue in the state Republican Party. But what were some of the things that sort of jumped out to you?
Well, this year is more of a dual track for a message. So yes, on the surface, we need to come together. We've got these kind of factions where you've got the MAGA Trump Republican faction, the old guard Republican. So yeah, we all want to be together, stop fighting about things. There's also the Brian Schimming factor. And we've talked about this before where the party struggled to raise money. We got a new federal report this week, got outraised more than 4-1 in the month of April in the federal reports compared to the Democratic Party. Well, by the way, they're also down from like a third or fourth what they raised the same period 4 years ago. So something is off for Republicans, okay? They lost a big spring Supreme Court race badly. But that whole push on Schimming is like losing some legs right now. I mean, obviously, there are two meetings. Nothing kind of came out of those. Or one meeting and one attempted meeting. Nothing came out of it. So at this point, if you're a Schimming critic, what do you do? Do you keep pushing this issue? You keep hearing from all these people at convention, let's just work together. Let's get through the November election. We're unified behind Tom Tiffany, who got the endorsement of the party. Eric Toney, who's running for AG. We're all behind him. We don't have an ugly primary like in 2022 for governor. We are on one page. Let's stay on that page. Kind of like a little hint to all these like folks of stop it. Just knock it off. Let's kind of get through this. Now, the other thing is for these Schimming critics, what do? You don't have an alternative. And in talking to people at convention last weekend, one thing that came through my conversations was you don't want to be the person who loses big your first election. Now, not predicting anything for November, but read the poll numbers, look at the gas prices outside the stations. It's not great environment for Republicans right now. if you were to push out Schimming and take over, do you want that environment for your first election? You want to be the guy who follows the guy who loses that election, right? So there might be a little bit of a peace accord kind of thing, but it's still percolating in the background of these guys who want Schimming gone.
Yeah, it could even be, actually, Schimming could be sort of a convenient fall guy if they do have a disappointing November. The other thing is that, you know, he has the backing of Trump, and one thing that we've seen this week in elections in Louisiana, Kentucky, and elsewhere is that Trump's endorsement still carries a great amount of weight within the Republican Party, and so if he's the Trump guy, that counts for something.
And two things Republicans have going for him. One, Democrats are not well-liked. Look at the polls I just talked about. They're not popular at all. And two, they have a ton of money, a ton more than outside of Wisconsin. Now, Wisconsin, different story. But nationally, they have a ton more money than Democrats do. That's going to be a big help for them in fall.
And looking towards those same elections, we saw some big six-figure ad buys come in the Democratic election. You've talked about, you know, these kind of groups that start popping up with names that have some combination of Forward and Progress and Sunshine or whatever. So two of those groups launched, as far as I can tell, in like the last 10 minutes. Yeah. You know, they are not anywhere registered on the ethics line yet. The Wisconsin Forward Fund, which is aligned with Sarah Rodriguez, and the Wisconsin Future Rising, which is aligned with David Crowley, both of them making these six-figure TV buys in Milwaukee, Madison, and Green Bay, so these big Democratic markets.
So Rodriguez, her group now, it's not her, like she's not, doesn't own it, but the group backing her, pretty expressly in the ad, talking about Sarah and the run for governor. I'm not quite sure how it's not an independent expenditure. Those use the magic words, vote for, vote against, support, oppose, that kind of thing. If you do an IE, you have to file a report with the state that details what you're doing. Kind of curious why they haven't, but I'm not a lawyer, so they must know more than I do. The Crowley group, much more of a, David Crowley's fighting back against the Trump prices. Call David Crowley and tell him what a great guy he is. There's no magic word there, so that's okay. Ad Impact tracks buys Rodriguez, the group supporting her, is about $350,000 so far over the last week since I first saw the spot. Crowley's group, about $100,000. So for Crowley, okay, it's a start. Rodriguez, it's a better start, but is that enough to catch Mandela Barnes for name ID? Go back to 2022. Alex Lesry spent almost $15 million by the end of June to try and catch Mandela for name ID, and by end of July had dropped out. That tells you it wasn't easy. Now, is Mandela the front runner or a front runner? Depends who you talk to. But he has more name ID than anybody else, and we're watching for the spending to come in to try and catch him. Now, the other thing about this whole dynamic is everybody knows we have a June 1st filing deadline. Is anybody going to drop out of this race before then? And in talking to people this week, it's been interesting because no matter who you are, you can make a case of why I'm going to be the alternative to Mandela Barnes and you are not, right? You have no path, I do. But they don't have a path if they have money from a group and the right combination. If you have seven people who are legitimate candidates running this field, it raises the prospect of Mandela winning the primary with like 30%, right? That can very much happen. Roger Roth won the primary for lieutenant governor for Republicans 4 years ago, 30.1%, I think it was, if I remember correctly. That happens in big fields. So if you are a Joel Brennan and you want, I'm the more moderate alternative, you need to see Sarah leave the race and David leave the race and Missy Hughes leave the race to get that one-on-one or one-on-three or four race. But why would David drop out? He's got a group. Sarah's got a group. Kel DeRoys has a backing of WEAC. They've all got an argument of why I could get there if I have the resources and the right combination. So what's going to happen between now and June 1st? Looks like they're all going to stay in right now. If somebody drops out, I wouldn't be surprised, but I can see when they make an argument that I can do this.
And, you know, meanwhile, Tom Tiffany was endorsed at the state convention, so he has this unified backing from his party, and the Democrats are really trying to figure out, you know, who's going to be their guy or gal. A little bit of news that came out yesterday is that a federal judge tossed this lawsuit from the federal DOJ asking for Wisconsin voter numbers. So these are these lawsuits that have been filed in, I believe, 30 states and the District of Columbia, asking for a very detailed and unredacted voter roll. So names, addresses, voting history, citizenship data, this kind of thing. The argument is that Title III of the Civil Rights Act says that states have to maintain these records, and so they should have access to it. It's a sort of election integrity argument. And a number of states have three states complied, and then a number of states have filed suit against it. A federal judge in the Western District yesterday threw out the suit in Wisconsin, essentially said that Title III has no bearing here. It's not relevant.
So it's interesting, documents that a state receives versus ones they create. That's the basic crux of the decision. If you receive these various voter records from somebody applying to vote, for example, then that's what the judge said this was all about back in the 60s with southern states in particular and suppressing black vote. They want you to keep these records and make sure you're not suppressing the black vote. This is a list created by the state. Ergo, the created document is not under, falls under that law. So far, no federal judge has ruled in favor of the Trump administration and has pursued these records. They've appealed in at least two or three states, I believe. So watching for an appeal here. I have not heard back from the U.S. DOJ since it's lost yesterday. But yeah, that's the crux of it. Received versus created.
Yeah, and you know, Democrats really pointing to this as a voter suppression mechanism. Mm-hmm. And so there was a response from the Democratic Party. Wisconsinites are now safe from having their privacy invaded and sensitive personal information handed over to the out-of-control Trump administration. And then notably in their statement, they also said, like, thank you, Josh Call. This is a great case for Josh Call to be reelected. And fun fact, Maine also had their decision in their own case yesterday. And so it is 8-0 in favor of states versus the DOJ as of yesterday. Mm-hmm. Also this week, Evers announced that he had issued 220-some-odd new pardons, bringing him up to more than 2,000 pardons issued across his administration. That is different than commutation, so we can get into that a little bit. But essentially, he has made this a little bit of a part of his kind of legacy making that these sort of nonviolent offenders, if they prove that they have kind of you know, taken responsibility and made amends and worked to better themselves and their communities, that they can have pardons. That doesn't mean that their records are expunged, but the pardon then becomes part of their records. What does this tell you about sort of his last year in office?
Well, fun fact, he crossed a record a long time ago. A Republican government in the 1940s issued 943 pardons. That was a previous record. Evers blew by that a while ago. This to me is like a separate from the commutations, which is going to be much dicier politically. Okay, let's say I had a drug offense in my teens, did something bad, but I've been clean ever since. Okay, I can see where you go. That second chance, right? Let's restore the person's rights for whatever. However, I killed somebody in a crime spree. Why should I be let out of prison? That's a different, more difficult case to make to the public that that's a good idea. Now, all we know is we're getting bits and pieces of who's applying for these commutations. I'm going to bet you money there's nobody released until after the election in November. Just a funny feeling that I have. But for a governor's way out the door, this is going to be part of his legacy. And will it be a good legacy or will it be something controversial as a way out of office?
Yeah. And so that brings us to the stock report for this week. And rising is Will Martin.
So he got the endorsement of the party for lieutenant governor. Now, Will ran for lieutenant governor 4 years ago, finished in fifth place, not in the answer to the vote. David Barnum also ran 4 years ago. He's back. He got, I think, seventh place with less than 9%. Okay, they're back. Only two qualified for the vote, which was basically you had to raise $50,000 by March 31st, no personal money, nothing from PACs or family, and have at least 300 donors, do some other things. Will got 70% of the vote from the activists, crossed the threshold for the endorsement. Okay, good. Now, what do you do with it? Well, it's not always a guarantee of success. 4 years ago, Orlando Owens, an activist, got endorsed for treasurer. He got 35% of the vote in the primary in August. Now, it's been a giant mystery how that happened in Wisconsin politics. John Leiber, current treasurer, didn't spend a lot of money. Neither had more than $30,000 spent before the primary 4 years ago. They weren't communicating to people. Orlando got promoted by the state party. So how did he lose? I mean, one, Orlando had some financial troubles, including a couple of foreclosures. So if you Googled him, you would see that right away. Do you Google candidates where you go to the vote? I don't, you know. So I'm not sure that was it. John was first in the ballot. Was that enough to, like, win in the primary? We really don't know. So for Will, their challenges are, okay, how do you communicate to the base that I am the guy who's endorsed? And then two, do you get, like, join the hip to Tom Tiffany as quickly as you can and say, we're a team. I know I haven't been elected yet or won the primary yet, but I am part of this endorsed team with Tom Tiffany. I'm going to open every event that he does. I'm going to open it up. I'm going to do the first speech. I'm the one you want to know that I'm the guy. That's his challenge, is make sure people know about it and the right people, because there is nothing on the ballot in August for Republicans except for the 7th Congressional District primary. There's no primary for, you know, well, there are other people who are on the, I want to diminish, like races for Secretary of State. They're important, but those primaries don't drive turnout, right? So there's no big race to drive turnout unless you think this race is going to drive it, which it's a tough case to make. So he's got to get there and communicate to people.
Mick, speaking of the continued fallout from the deal last week, Howard Markline.
So this is fascinating to me. Howard Markline, one strategy to get him reelected is to use the coattails of Tony Evers. So this is going to sound odd, but the Jobs First Coalition is a Republican group. It always backs Republican candidates, or almost always. They have out two ads for Markline, a mail piece that I saw this week and a digital ad. Both of them link Howard Markline to Tony Evers. There's actually on the mail piece this logo that has two hands shaking, and it's like Markline and Evers like delivering for Wisconsin. It's this kind of interesting logo. There are three pictures of Markline and Evers' bill signing ceremonies and the 38 Markline bills that Governor Evers signed. Like, you can't get more explicit. He's like tied to Tony Evers. This is a Republican, all right? Like, a Republican co-chair of the Finance Committee. The digital ad, same message. And so in talking to people this week, Democrats are like, this is means how bad the GOP brand is. It is so toxic. They want to have him not be Republican, essentially, but like strip away the R and make him something else. The other theory here was, theory I heard was, actually what this is people hate both parties right now, which is true. They want you to work together. So if there is a GOP bad environment, if the Dem wave is coming, the way to survive it is to build your own brand and rise above that wave. So this is an effort to create basically a unique brand for Howard Markline and say he's not just a typical Republican. Yeah, you may hate Donald Trump, but he's not Donald Trump. He's this other guy who works with Democrats and delivers for Wisconsin. Now, that polling from Better Wisconsin Together I told you about, yeah, Markline's district, Trump is not very popular at all. It's an interesting seat because redrawn, Kamala Harris got 1.1 percentage point more for votes than Trump in that district in 2024. In a bad year for Democrats, it looks like a good year for Democrats now. What's that mountain for Howard to climb? This is how he might climb it, by hitching himself to Tony Evers and saying, we're buds.
Yeah, I mean, really one of the most interesting races going on right now. I think a couple months ago, if I'd seen an ad like that, I would have thought it was a hit piece out on Howard Markline. Following this week, there was a report out about judicial staffing across the state.
So this is from the Supreme Court. Basically, we need 30 more judges and commissioners to handle the current workload, according to this study. The Supreme Court released it. They're going to use this to build their budget request that's coming up. Believe it or not, it's election year, but budget requests are due in September to the Evers administration. But it also ties into a story that a couple weeks ago that there's an annual report about the appeals courts, and it shows the length of time it takes to get a decision done. If you have a three-judge panel from the day you get the case until you have a decision is more than 500 days. That is important to note because there's an appeal before the second district right now about Act 10. It was filed in December of 2024. We're still waiting on that decision. Now, part of the problem is at the appeals court level, you're getting a slight rise in cases. So it's up 50% the length of time you had a decision from three-judge panels compared to a decade ago. Now, cases are up 6%. What's happening is more motions are being filed, they're more complex, and they're noting the use of AI by their people representing themselves in court, often inmates. They're using AI to draft budget or motions and briefs to help them try and get out of prison. So it's an interesting phenomenon for them. They're going, okay, we're getting too much stuff. So what do you do? Do you get more staff for them, more judges? That's going to be interesting to watch in the budget process, what the courts ask for and their caseload.
And that will do it for us at Rewind This Week. I am Ani Van Wagtendonk.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
See you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.